Runs in a circular motion. Love is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything. Anyway, you can be happy if you let yourself be. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Love is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything. Anyway, you can be happy if you let yourself be. Happiness runs in a circular motion. Love is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything. Anyway, you can be happy if you let yourself be. Life is a merry-go-round, and it's in the south of time. Don't let it break your mind. Love will come round in the end.
We're looking at the light.
Looking at the light, and as you shoot it, you direct the afterness to the floor. present of this mental age. Everybody seen it? Noticing that you started to feel like you're moving your awareness to this. Don't try to block it. Don't try to come back to consciousness. Just hold it. I'll do that again. Watch it flash and keep the rise of the after image of the light and try and follow it as long as it can with your consciousness right down to the different levels. It's going into outward mental. Yes, watch it flash.
You keep the eyes open.
Yes, keep the eyes open and watch it flash.
Just watching it
explode. Yes, just with the flashlight, flash it explode right in front of your eye and watch it. Where are you going to look at the flash? Don't move my shot in there. Alright, 2, 3, 5. That's just to show you that it can be. Are you ready? Watch it for the flash. 1, 2, 3. That's why it's better to be in the middle, so everybody can get.
Yeah,
you want me to push the button and do it?
Robert. Can you bring it up in the air?
Oh, yeah, it is. We just like an idea by sitting in the room and you see what I can
do.
Behind. excited, we haven't started omnidirectional rhythms. Then you discover that you don't see with your eyes anymore. But something is seeing through you. Basically, the best something that you didn't see has no will. It doesn't direct motion in the body. Now you begin to recognize that it's called divine will be done, or this cosmic principle of light that is holding the image of your self-identity as it disassociates from the self. This function is actually what you're looking for. That's the paper that you're calling for. You can experience it. You can kind of experience it. It's rather just trying to do this. The experiment of one to where you can make the association with your concept of will, what it actually will. What is the actual will in you? The scripture says, nothing moves except by divine will. There is no experience except by divine will. But we can trigger or generate experiences by our so-called craving will or trained will. The action of holds things in place. And when you were withdrawing, remember that object moves, and yet you think people are letting you control it with your own will. Remember that? How fit are your mind thing? Has it moved and so on? No. It was gone away as you kept on watching it. The only way you kept retaining it is because you close the eyes then. And you maintain what is called the active image of the awareness. So that the will now would suddenly be put aside for you to observe now the true you. The experiment is very, very instructive because it leads now to help the individual to go deeper into the levels of the brain. And the levels of the brain are very, very subtle and have to do with slow cycles, not fast. The training you now to be more observant with the eyes and more attentive with the ears.
I could hear it was when I said the whole name. It's hard to describe, but it was just like hearing my whole body and that.
Alright, you bypass your mental will into your physiological will. With your mind, you're thinking that I don't stop this thing. It can go nowhere. That's your psychological will. The physiological will is an entirely different function. That's the true will. It is internally inside you, the physiological will. The psychological will is your subtle will. It's trying to hold. We assume that it can hold the image. It's assumed that it can draw from some reservoir of force to stabilize it in the image to stay there. This is a true function on the psychological will of that. Now, what actually occurs is on a physiological level. The real cosmic will that holds the molecules of everything, the cohesive adhesive force, adhesion and cohesion, active force, and holding this together. Now, find a rapport after a while, and this rapport occurs in the paper level at the point of diminishing, where the image starts to diminish. You see, you were able to hold on to it inside, and you took it from that level, and drive it in and hold it, and then start to fill it, so that is out of it. Now, when it starts to disappear, and you were afraid of losing it, then you shouldn't, so that's then we could go with it. That would be the break between psychological realm and physiological realm, that things now are real restored to body, or this physiological oneness. Then that break, or that particular realization, causes the whole head to be omnidirectional vision. Yes, it's true, because you are on the verge of going through it. Now, you see how close you are to this inner experience. It takes many, many years of abstinence and deprivation to arrive at. So we don't have to take all that long time like before to get the result that we're looking for. We can eliminate a lot of the extraneous practices to focus on where we're going. The reason why that type of long deprivation is brought on is because the brain is not trained to accept past defects as it does today in terms of what can be there and so forth. The form of the disease is that it has all come on as an accoutrement of an asset for us in this society. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to cook and then we'll leave it wrong. The agricultural man don't have that type of stress. The industrial man can, by these different changes, these different reflexes, he has actually developed certain conditions for the brain to go through these interchanges faster than the man who lives in the accepted society. So he has learned that society has certain ingrained traditions and taboos that are already not genuine anymore. They're still hanging around in the brain of that individual from its environment and act as an impedance. You know, they still look at water running through the pipe as something very bad, that work of a sinister creature of the state. And there's all kind of different mental aspersions to different physical laws that are there. It's just natural laws, as magnetism and so forth. So they have got this whole mental block. And the more we explore these blocks and put the right perspective inside, then it's easy to go into what is called a sensory withdrawal or sensory deprivation to focus, thus breaking the association between psychological will and physiological will. The real strength of the individual is not in psychological will. Psychological will is the weak will, not the ego, not constantly trying to say it can do something. But the real cosmic will is in physiological will, because it's the bond of this mechanism. You know, this is the thing that holds together. This is where the tremendous force lies. It's in physiological will, not psychological will. Psychological will is that elusive will that is constantly pre-assuming that it can control a condition or an experiment from within or without, on the basis that it can draw from an unlimited energy pattern or an unlimited energy reservoir. Figure it out, you know what I mean? It is with that peculiar type of attitude that it is psychological will. Now, physiological will is the opposite. Psychological will is this aggressive drive to gobble the whole thing like a crab or hold on to it. This makes the brain race all the time. Physiological will is letting go and let it happen. Now you begin to see the difference between the two. The physiological will would be the cosmic will. See? And the psychological will would be the ego will of the individual craving to evolve this particular phenomenon. And once you can go to the point where it seems to merge, what is called the observer and the subject. When these two things become synchronized for the first time, we have now a release or union, that's where the word yoga comes in, that's where the word yoga or union, because the union between these two poles, between a psychological pole and a physiological pole. And you're using seed, that's why I say meditation is seed, meditation is seed. You're centering the attention on an image of a seed, something of gesture, something related, which you saw, and then trying to synchronize and let it occur for the first time. And what occurs is what a yogi calls samadhi, a sense of at-one-ness. And your body begins to hear such a sound, you have made it, then slowly it becomes like a fourth dimensional experience. Your vision or internal awareness now is omnidirection. Hence you get this term God or internal life practice. It's omnipresent. There is no way to say I am not something in there. Omniscient, because you have to pull it all over, and omnipotent. These are really descriptive of this cohesive oneness from your psychological level to your physiological level, which is the bedrock of the self. Now, the physiological level is not materialistic. Let us not kid ourselves that it's term physiological that is materialistic, it's not. The physiological level is the cosmological level. Because the essence of the substance of the thing seems to come from. You get it? That's why it's called the physiological level. Because when it takes a form, the form is just a substance, and that force that brings it together and holds it together is the cosmological will, or God's will, holding it. And if your basic substance, if your basic you, that is going from psychological or program type attitude to internal construct attitude. Because your program attitude is what your parents have built up in you and what you think you can do in terms of handling your environment. But what is construct within you, as the molecules of attitude and so forth, this already is set. When you discover that part of the experience, you discover the vast reservoir of this particular realization. And that's where you start to get it. That's the actual inner reservoir that you want to get. And that's the real inner consciousness, the real inner locking. You want to get to that point where the psychological will diminishes and synchronizes into the physiological will. It's the real you. And it's the most rewarding experience that you're trying to get in that level. Because hitting, that's what we call theta level. When you get there, you have this omnidirectional feeling, or one feeling. This is called the height. And it says, now, you can't stay there unless you have a program or work to stay in that state. And that's where you discover that the block are sins of karma, which are the black things, they impede or seem to prevent you from staying there, because these blocks are like devils. They seem to pull you back up, make you float away from there, back to the surface area. Instead of staying down and weighted downward, you seem to move back up. You're not staying down in that reservoir. You're going back up. You're going back up to what is called sexual level. So you seem to go back again into a psychological level, psychological real level. It's a sexual level. You're not staying down in it. If you're staying down in it, you wouldn't get sleepy. See? Now, since you're not getting sleepy, and you're tending to come out again back into the outer world, that means you're starting to float up. You see, floating back up from the bottom of it, is coming back to Australia and looking around there, I'm trying to find a job for you. And with, you know, the fish live under the water and the reels, but the coming up to the surface is just occasional reaching for the outside. So trying to get sleepy or trying to get back to the outside to pick up where you left off is the psychological attraction, is the psychological will to control. And that's what we call the elusive will. That eludes us. That area of our inner nature tends to delude us, like floating us up. We become like cork. You know? Now to weight us down, to weight you down, is to give more centering of yourself. And then you float up. The floating up sensation is like a whole host of things trying to pull you up. Because these are what you call your attractions. They're all tending to pull you away from the bottom to the top. And one of the things of floating up will be the ideal location, because it's nice to float up, you know. When you then in the actuality you have to move it in, into the consciousness. You don't want to float out from it. So the more you go in and get weighted down in it, is the less attractions you have outside that will suck to you and pull you back up. In other words, your karmic patterns are like cork stuck to a big anchor. After a while, what will happen to the anchor? It'll float, right? It'll all come to the surface, and that's not where you want it. You don't want it to come back to surface area, because there's too many corks attached to too many things to help it. And cork is a very light thing, so it's very deluding. It's a symbol of realizing how your true nature is. The true nature is rooted inside, cork. And more attractions that you have tend to pull you to the surface. So the more you are entangled with these blocks, they wake you up. They pull you up, they make you float up. Now as you cut away from them, as you chip away from these type of buoys, or different conditions that tend to pull the surface to float, the more you precipitate them. Then when you end that state, you are now going on like a belt, a diving belt. Can go down and survive and work in that field. And do your, what is called your spiritual oceanography. Maybe what is just left here because we discovered our life under the sea. So this is part of the consciousness of religion, because as a self, we evolved out from the So we have to go down into that mechanism to see these physiological structures on an omnidirectional experience. And then we have now this oneness with life. Because what is the human body but a chain nail or a whole cloth of silk? We're all locked into one. But it can go down to that fatal level and get the experience of one enclosed feeling and in all directions, then you automatically can see the link bond with it. And you can come up that on the physiological level into the psychological level. So modern man is closer towards realization and than primitive men. Simply that modern men have made more effort to be born modern from primitive society. You can't have a modern body or an industrialized body unless you went to primitive who made all the effort to disassociate by long deprivations and monasteries and long trips to the desert, long trips up the mountainside, and going and all these different civilizations into solitude and seclusion, self-chosen seclusion, to get to this level of inner composure. So to be born now in an environment where all these reflectors should be put to the test, and then suddenly find yourself exposed that to a drop in consciousness that you can orient to. Now, we are in a sense right now, in this industrial complex, working towards an internal unity, is preparing the body for the next incarnation that would put us in a far more complex society that may not occupy something, that may be occupying space stations or different areas in other life support systems, where the ability to drop down from psychological real level into physiological real level seems to be normal at age 1, 2, and 3, continuing on. Okay? And we would have this ability of dropping down to these levels faster, because we would be called upon to use them in an environment that is already caught up with some of the basic changes to provide for this unusual sensibility of the human being. What is called divine expansion. This is the journey of divine expansion. You see, because right now we are in beta level. We've left a lot of beta levels to come into alpha level in this industrialized system. We're not trying to work in the alpha level to put us into the society that we're behind with, deeper level. So when a primitive man in the next environment would be considered an alpha. An industrialized man today would look at a primitive man and call him beta. The primitives are in beta. Now we have moved out from beta to alpha. We can do a lot of things in alpha and work with alpha. And we're preparing ourselves now, inwardly, for a deeper environment. So when we come from born in a deeper environment, a primitive would be an alpha. And those born with this unusual ability to drop down into the level would be in theta. More and more, according to the master in autobiography, the yogi, all these levels are set up. We are evolving into the divine nature. But nevertheless, from a trip right through, from Theta all the way down into Delta, and from us can go all the way back into Omega. We do have a few that go through like that. Because those individuals have learned how to disassociate from any type of attachment to psychological will, and can lock into psychological will. This is what is called the desireless action. Action without craving. Now it's not so easy thing to do. We have too many distractions, too many confrontations, too many different reflexes that we present. It's when you're able to master alpha and stay stationary, then the control of these other levels become active.
I was noticing that when I was watching this, it was still in there, and just by watching it,
thinking that I'm trying to control it. Now you see your discovery is such a marvelous self-discovery of these basic rules of spiritual training. When you apply what has been given as discipline from the outer world, from the beta level, as a religious background, you will start to see why it is working there. How come certain things can work? And now, if you suddenly realize that it's going away, and if you give it love, it will start to magnify. Now it feels like it's not a fly, it feels like a bullet. That's what it is. in our shepherding part of it. The more love you have, and the more non-relationship you have with anything, that means the more you're unattached, the inner starts flying through you. You become the focal point of it. Instead of staying away from you, instead of you looking, it's becoming you now. It's rushing towards you. Right. But you have a problem. Then it starts to come in. There's a confusion in your mind between psychological, physiological, your pattern. This is to have supremacy. Your fear is that you don't want to give that particular unity level control of this physical level. Because you don't know what's going to happen. But nothing can really happen except the two things are passing into each other. Our strength within again is psychological. I'm sure you can, that's why this particular experiment is good for you. To see the difference between what is your psychological view and your physiological view, where you're placing the emphasis on things about yourself. You see, you're placing the emphasis on psychological view to represent ourselves, to give ourselves a sense of confidence. Then in actuality, the sense of confidence really comes from the physiological view. Now, it's the psychological view that triggers the psychosomatic condition in the body. That's what triggers it. The psychological view continues reinforcing symptoms that are psychosomatic. And then physiological view eventually satisfies, because the design has to do and to provide an outlet for that reinforcement. So, on a physical level, the pattern would start coming through as a pain condition, as a pain memory, at the external experience level. Now, until we can resolve this particular attitude by releasing it and accepting it, the psychological level is elusive and is not real, and allow the physiological level to start pushing through. It will be very, very painful in the early part to let it go, because certain images will come up that have been suppressed physiologically and are going to be confronted psychologically and may not be very pleasant. And therefore, you are put into two conditions. One, the same ridiculous way you are when it's happening. Three, lack of the knowledge of how much control you can let go or be capable of holding yourself in composure when it happens. But this one makes you feel outsourced to yourself. And the normal conclusion of the brain would want to assume or state is that they don't belong. But it's very normal for us to do that. You see, that you would follow the least line of resistance, the least line of resistance in the brain to arrive at that conclusion. It's when you don't fight it and you begin to accept it and go along with it on the two or three repetitions, this is where the therapeutic level comes from now. Repetitive action of the brain. You begin to see now not only the self-discipline by repetition, but the therapy from repetition. So therapy is dosage, and self-discipline is also dosage. It's a reinforcement principle, so that it starts correcting itself. Now, we all do feel sorry for ourselves and kill ourselves. We all got this kind of problem. Many of us at least don't even know it's like. Down there on a total big, you know, like a balloon. It's half the customer. But until, and it's a very, very interesting way of image release, of the images that are included up by the psychological brain, to be important to the consciousness. once you can actually go into it, sometimes all these things start opening up. And crying or hammering or kicking is one of the levels. Some researchers have gone to the point where they call it bionetics, or the energy of the body itself from the confrontation, making the individual want to stamp and shout. But it's actually psychological relief for the painful experiences. They're very strong. And what is interesting about it, if you observe when the pain came on in any death, there is always a color associated with it. A very significant association. And the color keys you or cues you in what psychosomatically or psychologically is impinging and causing the reinforcement. And if you can think back before you get the bulb was flashed about the painful sensation, what color comes to mind? You don't have any mental reservation, so automatically you'll give a particular color, which would indicate the shock accurately. Then the release will come, or the feedback will come. So usually you find it in everyone, usually you'll find most of us will have a sort of a color, no color, then it's actually greater color, or automatically becomes a color library. But it's always a tussle or a struggle to go through that decision point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the unblocking is remembering when it first began. So it falls even in a slightest way when the sensation began and what color would come to your mind from the sensation. The trouble manifesting in the body is a result of the shock or the stress that leads up to it in a matter of 24 hours or 3 days or 4 days that the stress is leading to a culmination point for the actual experience. So the experience itself, when it's done a color, would carry a color. But it's already programmed into it to bring this about. So a good example of a person who was not too long here, who patient, who had a lot of problems and could not know why suddenly one day the whole 6 years in one year collapsed. And she went to a lot of doctors. She was going to them for a long time. And yet each one, she went to a series of different types. So she knew. So you said anything, she didn't dare to. Usually people don't come to me until they give up to die. Go home to stay and remain as they are. So I had the case history, I didn't have to ask the case history of a different diagnosis. And she kept telling me. Then she said, well, what do you think I've got? I said, well, that's all good and fine, you got it all. God, what did doctor tell you? But let's find out something else. I'm going to ask you a stupid question. What color comes to your mind when you think of the problem? She said, what do you mean color? You think of a color. No, I think of a color now, okay? They can't just decide what triggered the problem in your life. All they can decide is a certain physical result. What triggered it? And she told me the color. She said, yes. And first she didn't want to tell me the color. It took a while for her to decide it. She said, well, I don't see any color. All I could think is some sort of thing. Who can say a color? All I know is in my mind. Well, I say it's one of the brains on that. It's brains on that. It's kind of like memory, but... So I'll pick a color. How can I say what color is being burning in? Well, it's a price. Yeah, man. Yeah, well, it's red. I thought, you said it, you have to make it red, but you decided. I don't know why, it's red. The physiological will release the actual impact of the shock from that level to the conscious mind is beside it. Then when she said that, when I said, trust your lifestyle. And then she even picked it up. It was a trust of my lifestyle. And I said, do you realize what you just said to yourself? Then it dawned what she did say. The wrong portion of the communication led to the next unconsciously releasing. And then she began to describe what really touched her lifestyle. Her husband came back from the war, and she was accustomed to working in this city. Everything was going fine, nothing was going wrong. Then often, suddenly he's going to buy a farm, and he's going to go and suffer it, covered in sheep and hogs. She's going to be deprived of this beautiful city life. So that was definitely a threat of her life. She didn't want that. Couldn't cope with it, but this was eventually after 2 or 3 weeks in the farm. I was busy moving around all the things that made me organize. But you have to collect subconscious mind and say that one. So get up in the morning and it throw the cock and the yelling and the cat or the speaking of the cow or so. And it refuses to respond, so throw all the overload into the conscious mind. That's automatically the trigger. Because she saw the whole pattern, as she revealed that she saw how it came back. Her whole mind starts picking up. She was so venomous about it in the anguish and the anger that she tells me on a conscious level, well, I forgive him for taking me there. But psychological forgiveness, but not psychological forgiveness. You know, the big difference between the two levels. And every time she closed her eyes, there's a painful flashback of the incident. She forgives her husband, yes, on a psychological level, she has to put up with it. She says, this is the life I've forgiven her. Yes, the body in the real sense of the word is not accepting psychological forgiveness. It wants physiological forgiveness. Yeah. See, this is why we say to forgive and to forget. But Jesus didn't say, Father, forgive them and forget them. Father, forgive them for they know that's what they do. Yes, their father, forgive them, forget them for what they did. Physiological forgiveness is forgetting. Whereas psychological forgiveness is the amenities one makes for another person. And inwardly say, well, okay. But then physiologically, it's not that okay. Because somewhere you're just going along with the situation to put on appearances. And there is anguish, there is tension. So you can go into your meditation and observe. That's why sometimes they use a rose or flame or candle. These are all basic ways to get down into that level. But getting down into the level is to know what you're looking for, what to recognize when you're there, and how it's not to come back too fast, to let it go on to its completed level. The reason why the teachers in olden days used to say, don't be, you can't do it by yourself and you need a teacher and all these things. Especially because we were living in an agricultural society where the mental blocks were so different and the complex nature of men striving to cope with natural laws. And it was very difficult. So they say, don't do it by yourself, let you go off and all kind of time, this would be true. But we have outgrown a great deal of the pattern of thinking we don't think of them now and they're used to thinking of 1,000 years ago. They come to accept natural laws in nature and in physical things. And they become to realize that when you go in, there is no celebrity pitchfork looking for you. The psychological part of you is the pitchfork. And the physiological part of you is the nice and shining armor. And you're actually rescuing your sense of identity to the nation. This is the story about St. George and the maiden from the dragon. This is the actual internal confrontation between physiological will, psychological will, and sense of rationality. Where do you place the emphasis on rationality? If St. George is your physiological will, the dragon is your psychological will, that's consciously pulling you back in. And rationality is the good. That's a balance. And therefore, as you go in now, you know this dragon, force field, that's why they call beta level, the dragon level, actually. It's the level that consciously has higher cycles that keeps pulling you up. It's the same name for beta. For the surface, the delusive pull of the psychological view. And the physiological view is the real law of the psychological view. Yes, they're very good. They're a very good prompter to indicate when you're in the level, but you do need a series of experiments to make it valid or work, but it's just an ordinary unit. What? Remember, it's a measuring device, number one. You have to think a little differently. It's not a device that's going to make you super conscious. It's not intended. I'll give you an example of what I mean. That's 12 inches, right? You just roughly say that's 12 inches. How do I try to use 12 inches? How do I guide myself to use 12 inches? So I find myself a ruler, right? And I must have the same type of breaking up, right? To go and measure it. So this is a measuring device. So this is the condition in space. And I need a ruler to do it. That's a device to help me resist particular condition in space. For this object that's existing in space can be measured this way, can be measured this way, and can be measured this way. Get it? You can have the length, you can have the breadth, and I can have the depth. All around I can do the measurement with a ruler. Length, breadth, depth. Okay. We call it a bathtub for sake of convenience. Now a bathtub will roll around in space. Let's say shoot it in space like a balloon. Floating bathtub will float around. How are we going to measure? Let's say you're on the Earth here.
Measuring space and
There's so many feet up on it.
here you are. Your wife has come back to you, and you shoot it up. So, you're going to measure its motion now. All you measure its motion is up. You measure its motion with another type of a ruler. Circular ruler. So you got a circular ruler. And you put a circular ruler with indicators. Well, that's a ruler too. This you call a watch. That's what it really is, actually. You're measuring the motion of this object going up and coming back down to the ground. The time it took to go up, the time it took to go down a certain distance. With a different type of ruler now. Instead of a straight ruler, you're measuring it now. Because when you shoot it up, it's not going to fall back right here. This object is, this whole thing is moving too, in relation to another thing. But it takes a certain amount of time going to get back to that point. This point may be over here in the space of 60 seconds. Or let's say the space of 10 minutes. Here would be actually here in the motion relating to another object. But you don't notice it because it's too relatively small for you to realize that. But you're using a circle of watch to do that. Now the alpha machine is also a ruler for going from one pressure level to another pressure level. Okay. So you have a way of measuring this particular wave. Now, the brain normally, when it's measuring, the alpha machine is there, and let's say you have a bag, and then the scan meter will go up and tell you that you're in beta at this point. This point is beta. Now, in 10 seconds you move this much forward. 15 seconds, 20 seconds, hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, you're over here, minutes over here, 20. That tells you how long it took that pressure to come down to say that you are in alpha level. Indicating how long it takes you to get in there. The needle is giving us an indication of how long it's taking the brain to slow down. Now, when it's actually registering on the graph or the calibration, by the time it moves and it stays there for now, you are in quiver. So they usually use one or two blades. They use a needle to indicate how long, or they use a beeper. Some kind of a signal. So you poke it on, and then you go. As you're getting closer to it, then you it's starting off now. So when you're in it, if you were to watch it on a watch, it took you that amount of seconds to get to the that it starts to be steady. It starts going So once you recognize that, you recognize a certain feeling of how the brain and the body feels when it's at that level. So you can actually tell that you're in alpha. And you can tell when you get out of alpha. It's like with the road runner.
You don't see those pockets of Roseanne? It's really like a Roseanne. It doesn't stop, you know. It's a funny phenomenon. You just like you pull up brakes and you start going in the opposite direction. After you hit the slow wave, then after you start back and forth. All right. Some of the sensations that follow alpha shutdown, alpha escape, is a type of a drowsy feeling. This is one of the escapes of comedy because brain is slowing down. The drowsy feeling. All right, let's hold on to that condition now. Feel it. How long we can stay in it before the BBB again. This is the development of staying in that level. Now, working in that level is the important thing. Arriving to that level and recognizing that level is your first orientation. Now, working in that level is different. How can you work in that level? Working in that level is the art of thinking of that oriented consciousness. You're busy thinking, you see. That's why they say you have to have the eyes half open, half closed. You look at the pictures of saints and their eyes all seem to have all these different artists, they draw them with their eyes half open, half closed. The squint is the focal point of working in that level. Because you are actually trying to stay at the borderline state, wide open, we revisit it again. And close down and shut down. And then in between is where you sit. Now, your brain would cause the body to get hot. So the first thing we do is to check if you are alpha ready. And so give you what is called not a machine that will check my pulse. This machine here is hooked up, and that's where we have the ADT is considered the measuring point. And immediately here, and we want you to read it now, 20 degrees. But the one thing you need to move this way, or that way, anyway, see how long it takes you to move the needle, how many degrees you can move it. Or even getting the body hot. 98. 0.98 So much is internally inside, not surface tension. Surface tension is always a 3-point something. Internally it can be, and it's put it back inside, or in the rest of the community. But the surface tension is really big. Now they hook it on, so funny phenomenon. What thing they look at them, hook it on to. They don't hook it on to no other finger. You ask them why. So well, this is the most practical one, because it's definitely they have fun. They don't know why they arrive at this one finger or this other hand. But they arrive at three out of the five fingers, the most practical finger to hook it to. Yet when you come back to realize that this thing is called the superheater. We are talking about the heat, raising the heat. Superheater. Now, the top of this finger here, this portion is the head. They have the highest peak. The next portion down here is the next highest peak. And this here is the lowest peak. That it relates to the head, from here to the neck, and from the neck down to the groin, which is the second groin, and from the groin down to the foot. It's hooked into the arm itself, the hand itself, the arm. And it's called triple heater, or triple warmer. This is actually a physical rheostat set up in the body. The line of energy that starts and creates. We don't have an organ in the body called pituitary. But the closest thing that would seem to have this phenomenon is the pericardium. And it would run through the pericardium line, run through the body. And it's called the pituitary. Now, the brain, if the body is cold or hot, you can regulate it. Have rotation on this finger. Either one. You can raise the heat of the body by turning it 2 times forward. On the top end, this is too hot, want to raise the hip in the head. You want to raise the hip in the foot, you have to run to the bottom part two times forward. You want to lower the hip, you turn it one time backwards. It's just like a walk. It's amazing. It's your built-in rheostat, your built-in temperature control. But they hook it to the part of this part here, which is the head, to see how you can raise the temperature. And then they start you off at 83.7 or 83.8 between there. So, okay, now see how long it takes you to raise the temperature. 1 degree, 2 degrees, 3 degrees, and go up. And it's interesting how long some people take even to go 3 degrees up. And you can be pushing and you say, come on again. And you work in, just going to show you the psychological will and physiological will, the will of war, the truth about yourself. Psychological will believes and knows and convinced so thoroughly that it can raise the temperature up on the surface area. And physiological will knows pretty darn sure it's going to be 98 and it's tired and it's going to be pretty wise to rip the turn loose to go 2 degrees from 83 to 85. That's physiological will. And you sit there and you struggle and struggle. Some people take an hour to get 2 degrees up. Those who have done any degree of meditation can raise it. Just as it is, meditation is a half awake, half asleep state. If the individual begins to realize that it's a form of physiological relaxation and physiological will control, not psychological will control, when you start to sit and condition your body. So the temperature will go up because of that person. The one who meditates, because he's learning to let go psychological will and allowing physiological will to run the body. So when you sit down to meditate, you center your mind, and it's obvious the moment you close your eyes and put it up here, you can actually feel the sensation of the body shutting down. You think you'll get cold. It ain't true. You don't get cold. You psychologically think you're getting cold, but physiologically you're getting hot. On that meter, it starts rising pretty fast. The more you think you're cold, the hotter you are feeling. And the more you think you're hot, it's going the opposite. It's going back on cold. Oh, yeah.
But
this is because of the illusion of psychological relationship and physiological relationship. One is an illusion. The yogis, or many yogis at one point, realize that this is a phenomenon of association. That this world that we call our world on a psychological level is an illusion. But in a physiological level, it's not an illusion. In a physiological level, it's an actual realm, but it has this dualistic play between psychological control of it and physiological control of it. Now, they use the word physiological, but it's not a correct term. It's the cosmological control. But we have to relate the substance in some form. We can't throw away the substance. The substance is there in some way to relate. And in essence, it's energy. We know it's energy, and it's cosmologically, it's there, and it's controlled by certain internal laws, all is going to maintain pattern. This is very consistent. So, for that reason, you say physiological, but outside of that, just believe and think, this very simple structure, believe and think that it can control its own density and its relationship outwardly, mentally. Then in actuality, it doesn't do that. Then it learns the lesson of letting go from the illusion of trying to trigger this control and let the control occur from within until it will let go, let God, outwardly, mentally. Then in actuality, it doesn't do that. Then it learns the lesson of letting go from the illusion of trying to tr- trigger this control and let the control occur from within. That's where you say let go, let God, not let go, let the psychological conditions dissipate and let the cosmological forces work without impedance. Then these forces will start to vibrate and they are measurable now. So you will find that even if you didn't do anything, you just relax and go. And just close your eyes and listen. You hook it up. That needle will go right up past it without any effort. You'll just relax. So the more you struggle to raise the temperature with your will from a psychological level, the more you don't go. And the more you forget the whole thing and say, okay, that's relax. The thing goes right up fast. And there you really learn the lesson of let go, let God. That's the way of synoptically saying it. In truth, essence of the thing is the psychological control is diminished for physiological control. And okay, you take a siesta. Basically, that is the best way to go on a machine to measure. You see, the machine is just a measuring device. Measuring to tell you where true relaxation occurs and how it occurs and how to bring it about. It can be brought about with certain cues. You won't take it yes or no and let it measure. Surely you get warm. Now, if the room is cold, the worst thing you can do is trying to keep warm. You get colder. But if you just sit back comfortably pull at the push and forget the coldness in the room, you start getting warm. See? Because you'll find a comfortable position, no matter how strange it is, you'll automatically see yourself going into a position that would be comfortable to you, very uncomfortable to others. But you'll start to warm up. Strange it is. And this is measurable. The body will start, surface temperature will start rising to compensate for the temperature. Astral level is in your paper level. It occurs in paper level. And we don't really chop. You would have experienced astral disassociation. That's what the word really means, not trapping. You would experience astral disassociation if you had continued to follow the image in the brain, that is, with the flashlight, till then you merge with it, seeing the psychological control and the physiological control, where you begin to experience oneness. You have what is called a sensory disassociation from the physical body. Now, because you have this sensory disassociation from the physical body, you begin to see yourself outside of your body. That's a very poor expression of saying, you know. For the first time, you have what is called a cosmological vision that you really into. You never was in your body in the first place. But it's very hard to tell somebody who's never in his body at all, you see. You just can't grasp that kind of stimuli. But really, you're never here. What the real me is around you. But it's from a physical look, that don't make sense. But if you can draw it, this is what it will look like. This would be actually what the physical body is here to be. But the real me would be something like this. The dotted line is the real me. But there's no way I can touch the real me. All I can see to touch is the illusory me. This part, so because I have what is called inverse stimulation from the real heat bombarding me. This is my psychological way to make me think, here I am, this is where I am, this is me. Because this real me is pushing this heat. It's what you call cosmological pressure. So the adhesive cohesive function of the atmosphere, if you were to take really atmospheric pressure, this is the pressure on the surface area that gives to the brain a sense of reality of the resistance. Now if you were to take away this pressure from the whole entire surface, what would happen to the body? It will just blow apart, right? So we're only kept together by this condition called the real me. Giving this some kind of an actuality, this is not an actuality, it's an illusion. The real actuality is this four fields, this is the real actuality. Now, when you have the internal experience of going in this direction, that's where you get a feeling of projection. You're really not projected. What has happened is that you've broken the internal stimulation on the surface of the skin by slowing down the brain for the first time, and to have this part of the body now lose all type of sensation, and therefore you see yourself on sense. You begin to have this type of experience. Radio is here now for the first time by disassociation. From inside. You may get disassociation from inside of yourself to cause this condition to be observed and looked back up. In other words, it's like a TV screen. The two pictures are out of focus. They don't seem synchronized. But it's the same way it is. It's off. And this gives you the feeling that you're outside and that something is connected to you that you can go floating off in space. This is the thing. Yes. Right. That's exactly what it is. Now, you start... But so, don't block the mind to the real experience and just lock on to the attitude of astral projection, because then you're losing off what is the actual reality of what's happening. You're getting carried away with the illusive reality. That's not the real reality. The real reality is that you, for the first time, you are experiencing the real you that holds this physical you together as a unit. You're experiencing your true self holding it together, and therefore you seem to be down there, looking down at yourself. Now that the down there is the illusive you, the real you is here looking at it, you see, projected. Now, this real you has to get back into phase with it, otherwise that doesn't stand up and walk. So the conflict will always be between the two. That this one will feel it has to go in there. That one will feel that it has to come out here. See? It's a pull of the movement. Now, once there is no confusion, then you realize that there is no such thing as astral projection. There is a condition called electrical expansion. The cells have now opened up their electrical nature to give you now like emission. So from the current camera, we begin to see this type of emission. the current channel still within the system. The emission started to be adjusted. Here's our name. So when this photograph, of course, supposedly under the sensation of astral projection, the body has a vast emission of light. And therefore the range of control or the range of feeling or the range of identity seems to be out in space. And because this is reaching out space and things like that going on, this particular movement would seem to touch every unit of space. So it's in my upper body can go any space I want. It gives that particular feeling. So basically if you see, if you take away this line, start. You are there. Automatically you are there. And this is what is actually happening inside. Now because this is the pure electrical energy flow, the first time. Now the certain writer says, in my soul I am free. In this movement, you are truly free. Because you're not bound, you're not limited no more.
It's psychological
part. Right. The psychological part is gone, and the true physiological part is flowing. There you have your first now, the difference between what I call astral projection and only present. You experience it for the first time, omnipresent. This is the true experience. If you keep on holding on to this type of a condition, then you will say you are having projection. But if you don't hold on to that condition and you just let it flow, as I said, you can merge, which is actually a state now, you will have omnipresent or oneness with the yogi called samadhi. You have the sense of at oneness. This sense of at oneness is there. There's everything going on. Now, coming back in is the phenomenon. This starts to shrink down, and this starts to build up. And this builds up into a circle to converge on your physical body. This here diminishes. But it can't diminish more than certain area. So what has really occurred? Instead of projection, you had a thin from inside of you. You had a physiological emission of this real you, the pure energy that into this core called a body now and condensing this energy now to it out in all directions, producing the illusion that you went someplace.
Is that right?
So cosmic consciousness or God realization is total memory. Now you understand how to say it's only total memory. The total memory of past, present and future, all occurring now. So this is what they call the oneness. So past life, future life, present life, all commingle as one. Now the advantage of the experience on the stable level is how to make use of the present body form and go out when you're ready to leave it, not being pulled out of it, but you can leave it on your own volition, that's where the delta level is, and carry with you certain qualities that you want to retain.
So that's
really the whole thing. So, but when you carry these qualities into the delta level as you go out, this is where it says, Jesus carried certain qualities in his own body when he was ready to die. He says, "Be of good cheer, for I've overcome the world. Father, forgive them." These qualities were all incorporated in ready to God, and he gave up the ghost on the cross. That means he didn't physically die on the cross. He just dropped down into delta level, and in delta level, the body would show no indication of physical symptoms that pertain to life. Now, on a stethoscopic level, not on an electrical level, if you touch the heart of the man Jesus on the cross, no telescope would do that. And if you stuck him with a probe, no grunt or hum would come out of it. These would be considered on a sonic level. Now, but on the ultrasonic level, or the supersonic level, he was much alive as you and I. But he's in a delta level of the brain now. Delta level of the brain is reconstructing. In a deep sleep, yeah. But such a deep sleep, but fully conscious, not dreaming, but fully conscious of the matrix of how the thing is held together. Understand? That is the state now. So when they stuck him with the spear, he didn't grunt. Water and blood came out. But the man is not trained to know in that position how he knows a dead man from a living one. All he knows, grunt means alive, no grunt means dead. That's all he's concerned. Report to the centurion, that they tell the big Caesar, man is dead. As far as the initiate at that time, the knowledge was so secretive, he couldn't explore it too much. They were very fortunate to have that much physiology to retain. They knew he wasn't there, he was in another level. Now, when they wrapped him up in the sheet and put him away with the herbs and everything, then he went from delta to omega level. It's in the omega level now, where that matrix or that archetypal pattern is maintained and can decide if not to rot or to materialize and dematerialize or to take the body itself. It's in that level. That's why he says, I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the start and the end. It's in that level, this mechanism now sheds the quality of having a shadow. It sheds the quality of decomposition. It sheds the quality of imprint, that is, to indicate weight. Because it's all pure energy, right? It's just another level. But the only thing that is going to give it some credence that it is a man, Jesus, is the archetypal relationship maintained from the